This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings, welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Wars podcast with your hosts, Tom and Jim. And we are here, and we're going to get very confused, I think, because the moment we've been waiting for, the only big movie of 2020, Tenet, is on the docket today, and we're going to review that. But before we get into Christopher Nolan's latest film, masterpiece, a lot of people are referring to it as, but I guess we'll break that down a little further.
Sure, or try.
We've got some casting news, and we've got some casting news and a return.
Yeah.
So let's start with something that kind of came out of nowhere, but we knew the casting was coming. I guess the choice was the one that kind of came out of nowhere, and that was Miss Marvel's casting of Iman Vellani,
right.
Who has she is brand new to acting.
Yeah.
Maybe has done some local plays or, you know, some YouTube stuff, but as far as television and movies, nothing.
As far as I could tell, yeah, I everybody says that this is it. It's crazy to think that, you know, this is going to be her first big part, but, and it's a big part. It's huge. So
yeah, it's a title of a series.
Yeah, for Disney or Disney / Marvel, no less.
Yeah, this is a huge moment, and we know Marvel takes risks, and they, you know, they give people second shots and first shots. Now, are you worried about this? Is this a series that was going to get you out of bed?
Well, yeah. I mean, I like everything, and this is a pretty Miss Marvel. You know, it is a pretty unique story. It's, you know, really the first female Muslim superhero, and she's has the Terrigen Mist. That's how she gets her powers. So
yep,
that's important to the story that we've seen so far. And you know, I'm not an avid reader. I don't know how much of it I've absorbed. I've always paid attention to it, and I've always known about her. So I mean, I would have watched it, and I don't. As everything else is coming to a close, it seems like all the stuff that we watch, that this will be slotted in somewhere pretty quickly. So,
yeah, it when she was cast, it, you know, there was a girl, and I think I talked about it on Active Geek. Her name is Geraldine Viswanathan, and she was in Blockers, and she's in the Broken Hearts Gallery. I was dead set that she was going to get this, and it turned out that she didn't, and I'm fine with that. I didn't have a lot of stock in Geraldine's career, but when this happened, I thought that she was 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, they're going really young for this role. So maybe this isn't going to be the adult undertone show that we were thinking of. Maybe it's that happy balance between Disney and Marvel. So maybe this was just a Disney choice. Come to find out, this girl's 18 years old. She was making some waves at Toronto Film Festival, so it's like she's known in the area.
I wouldn't see it. 18, never would have guessed it.
I thought she was Binx's age.
Yeah, I know. It looks like she stopped aging.
Yeah.
But, I mean, good to an extent.
You can keep her around for very many seasons.
That, and she could also, you know, she's might bring some maturity to the role. I mean, it's, if it was a 12-year-old character or a 16-year-old, I think she's Miss Marvel starts at like 13, right? Something like that in the comic.
Yeah, books. Somewhere around there.
Very young, no matter what. So, it's a smart thing to do. Is like, you know, is it see if they could strike light or, you know, catch lightning twice like they did with Spider-Man, you know.
Yeah.
They got a much older, he's not much older, but he's old enough, Tom Holland, that he's a good actor, and he's, you know, maturing as an actor, but he's playing a teenager. Let's see if they could do this again.
Yeah. I'm super excited, man. I'm ready to see her have her superhero moment. You know, we're big advocates of that, and we cheer on everybody who gets their moment. I think it leads to two things. I think this leads to the introduction of the Inhumans royal family. And I think it also this is a prelude to Young Avengers, maybe on the little screen.
Right. Yes, definitely. And seeing her powers, I'm kind of excited at, because if her powers are done well, and we, you know, she tell people she's a shapeshifter, but she's not just like, not like, oh, I could change the way I look like Mystique. She could enlarge parts of her body, get bigger and things like that.
Yeah, like Plastic Man.
Yeah. Or Mr. Fantastic, which is my point was going to be. If we see it done well, then, you know, it gives me hope for the future of Fantastic Four and stuff like that. So, you know, like I said, it all ties together. I'm starting to see how Marvel works their strings and how things work. So, it'll be cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. Speaking of Fantastic Four, I saw a post online from like this. It was a Facebook, you know, group that I'm in that does fan casting, and it was like my Fantastic Four, or it was a main publicity, but they did their whole thing, and it said their Fantastic Four was Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Elizabeth Banks, Dagger Montgomery, who I'm high on as Johnny Storm, and John Cena, and I didn't comment it because I don't want to fight with trolls online, but I said it out loud to myself. I was like, I'm not watching this movie if this is the case. I am so over the Elizabeth Banks experiment. I think I'm, and John Cena, like, let him stay with DC.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I do love him in that, but I don't see him as a Mr. Fantastic. I just don't see that. Not to say that, but I wouldn't mind seeing him somewhere else. You know, this only keeps getting bigger and bigger. There's places where I wouldn't mind seeing him. I think he'd do good. I think if they ever recast, like, Daredevil, I think he'd be great as Daredevil or something like that. You know, but he's a good actor, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a spot for him. And I thought that spot was Sandman over in the Netflix universe. But, maybe that's still Neil Gaiman starting that back up. So maybe instead of doing the movie, directing that movie that he was supposed to direct, maybe he'll star in the series.
Hopefully.
We'll see. But as we couldn't see him playing Mr. Fantastic, I want to ask you if you saw this coming. Jamie Foxx is back in the Spider-Man universe as Electro.
No. Never saw. I mean, it's although it's weird. I mean, we've seen what's his name come back as J. Jonah Jameson. So and they're the same person. It's what's his name?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. So not too crazy. And Jamie Foxx. Here's the thing. Jamie Foxx is a good actor.
Yes.
That was a bad movie, and it was. I think they did him dirty. So I don't know how they change it enough to bring him back without any stink on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, didn't they kill him in the movie?
Yeah. But that's,
they blew him up.
You know, we're seeing alternate universe versions of it, I guess.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just it's not going to be the same Electro. It's going to be Jamie Foxx turns into Electro through a different way or something like that, but it's
you know how
these alternate realities and universes work. So that'll be cool, and plus you know, it gives us more alternate universe stuff that we could sink our teeth into.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I had to process when I saw this, and I posted it on Instagram, and I was like, in words I never thought I'd type, Jamie Foxx is back as Electro. And he came out, and there's a few things that I want to break this down about, but he came out and said that he's not going to be green, or he's not going to be blue. He's not going to be blue, I'm sorry. So we don't get that where he has a Wi-Fi router on his head. So we're moving away from that. So maybe something a little more traditional. I know Boss Logic did something where he's got armor on, whatever. It kind of leads me to think that at first it was, okay, they're setting up for the Sinister Six. We have Vulture, Scorpion, Shocker, now Electro, and you could do Morbius, you could do Chameleon.
Yeah, they could go a million different ways, yeah.
Yeah, whoever they're going to introduce. But then Jamie Foxx posted a picture of his version of Electro in a thunderstorm sky with three Spider-Men staring up into it. Tom Holland, Miles Morales, and an older version of Peter. So does this lead to a live-action Spider-Verse?
That is... It could. But the thing about the Spider-Verse... I mean, it was a great story, but I don't see the live action ever doing as good as
not at all,
because it was like the back. I mean, so much work was done for like laying the background and seeing and making you feel like you're immersed in a comic book, like a moving mm-hmm. comic book. That's why it was so good. I mean, it was one of the greatest animation, and it's one of the best Marvel things that's ever come out. That being said, that it probably is going to be alive. I mean, it had to have happened. It has to happen eventually.
I think this is 100% a Sony move.
Yeah.
Bringing in a terrible villain from a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Into this movie, this new universe. They should have just brought Venom over. And had that been the big moment, like that's your money mark, and not Jamie Foxx's Electro. But my problem with this, and I do see this turning into a live action Spider-Verse, and a lot of people are saying it's through the multiverse, through WandaVision, through Doctor Strange and the Madness in the Multiverse. They're going to open up these pocket universes.
Yeah.
But what? And I see that happening, but I also see this kind of muddling up the story that we had with Tom Holland that was flowing so fluidly, and we got to the end of Far From Home, and it gave us something to look forward to. He's going to be on the run. He might need Daredevil. He might need She-Hulk. Kraven's going to come after him. He might need super friends, but I don't think we're getting that, because what we're going to get is, oh, my super friends are just me in different realities.
Right. Yeah. It makes me think that Marvel might not have as much control over that as they would like, and but what Sony? I mean, just let them do it. They're going to do it right, and you just collect money. I mean, I'll never understand goes on there.
Yeah, let Marvel finish their trilogy, and then that fourth movie can be Into the Spider-Verse. Now you're going to have It's very Sony, because what they do in their second movie or their third movie is they've muddled it up with so many characters that you have to remember are going on. Like, if it's the Sinister Six, now you're reintroducing old characters like Vulture, you're bringing back Mysterio, but then you're also going to introduce new personas. You're going to introduce Scorpion, because all we know is about Mac. Donald Glover could become Prowler. You have Kraven. You have Chameleon. You got to introduce those characters. And, oh, by the way, here comes Jamie Foxx, who's probably not going to play second fiddle to anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't really argue with that logic in a lot of aspects. But we should say the only thing that's been mentioned really is the only 100% valid true thing that we know, aside from the pictures and stuff. That's not real. I mean, that just might be him trolling us or him posting something that we like or whatever.
Yeah.
The only thing that we know is Jamie Foxx has been cast. We don't know for what. And, you know, this, like you said, could be a Sony move that eventually gets Jamie Foxx into his own movie for Electro or something like that.
No, thank you, sir.
I know. But, you know, I mean, he is a leading man, you know.
Yeah.
So, he's not...
He's good.
He's not the villains that we like, but he could be a villain that they introduce. So, we'll see.
And he's going to be huge, because I think this film's right around the time that he's either finished or beginning Tyson. And he's enormous now.
Yeah, he's been training for Tyson.
So, we'll see. Speaking of, we'll pick this rumor up next week, but I want to lay the seeds. Mark Wahlberg's talked to Marvel, according to numerous reports. I want to know what you think next week of who he could play. Because I know Chuck and I are going to talk about it on Galaxy or on Active Geek, and I've talked about it on this YouTube stuff, Super Late Show that I'm doing, and it's, man, it enraged a few people. So I'm curious to see where we hit next week.
Okay.
But I think with the last thing I'll say about this Jamie Foxx stuff is if he is trolling us, he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
And I think I might be hungover from our murder mystery dinner and our Enola Holmes review, because like he's laying clues and I'm trying to solve this mystery. You know, he posts that picture and then quickly deletes it. And then you go back to a couple years ago, Tom Holland was asked about the multiverse and the Spider-Verse in an interview for Far From Home, and he got tight-lipped. And then he started talking about possibilities, and we know how he is. Like, you can't tell him anything. Like, no. You definitely don't want to tell him a secret. So the Sherlock in me is saying that this is if this is trolling, this is A-class trolling.
Yeah. It's close. But that might, you know, Jamie Foxx is an old hat at this. Like, he's been doing this a long time. I you know. He's not Mark Ruffalo or Tom Holland, where they just, you know, you got to lock him in a room and give him one page of script a day. So yeah, and he is a troll. He you know, he could be a troll if he wanted to. So we'll see. I hope it's not what you originally thought. I don't really want Sony to helm this movie, but I would rather. They give it all to Disney to run, and then they just benefit from it, you know, the residuals and an eventual have them show up in your villain's universe, whatever you want. Make them a redeeming character. But you know, don't get your stink on Disney stuff. So,
prepare to be stunk out, because it's going to be a lot of Sony stink. They even came out and said they want to do more MCU crossovers. And of course you do. You want to make more money so you can put out more garbage movies. But we'll see. Let's actually review something. Let's talk about a movie that...
do our best to review
something. Yeah, let's try, because this movie came out about 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Right.
And it's the only movie to make money in theaters, and essentially is the only big movie that's ever going to be released in 2020, post COVID, because No Time to Die got postponed, and Wonder Woman got postponed 1,000 times. Black Widow's going to 2021, and Dune's probably going to get postponed. I can't see. Well, Dune and Wonder Woman are Warner Brother movies, as is Tenet.
Yeah.
But from what I'm reading, after No Time to Die got postponed, Regal and all the other cinemas are saying we're shutting down indefinitely.
Yeah.
They're closing everything because they're not going to be able to sustain who wants to see Akira 3,000 times?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's what they're showing.
Yeah, I don't know. And we've seen, like, they were running deals for, like, you know, $15 or whatever. It was, like...
15 cents.
Yeah, 15-cent movies. And I don't know. As a company, I don't know how movie theaters survive. There's a lot of industries, and there's a lot of places that are going to have a rough time. But, you know, at least restaurants, they gave them an option. Like, oh, just really quick open an outdoor option. Do this, do that. They don't have that opportunity. You know, they don't have an alternate way of making money. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, am I brokenhearted about it? Nah, not really. I've paid so much goddamn money in popcorn and everything else just to, see a movie at inflated prices. So I'm not like, I know it's kind of horrible to say to see an industry die that we're so kind of like connected with in what we do here, but I don't know. I don't know how they survived this.
Yeah, me either. It's it seems like it's a death sentence.
Yeah,
and I know like there's been a lot of talk about Christopher Nolan putting this movie out at the time that he did, and personally, I think it was a very selfish move. I think this was he knew that he had nobody else to compete with and that this could be talked about as like one of the best blockbusters of 2020 because there was nothing else coming out. But also, he didn't want to put it out next year because then it would get overlooked because of so many other great movies. But and then, you know, you hear him say, like, maybe I put it out because I want to give people hope. I want to revitalize it. I want people to see movies. But in my mind, the movie theater is one of the dirtiest places to go to during a pandemic because they're not misting the room 15 minutes before
the next showings. There's no quality control in general. There never really has been. There wouldn't be now, you know. I just don't see them putting forth the effort to, you know, meet a respectable, you know, cleanliness and make people feel safe. So I don't know. I don't know how they overcome this. So
I'll tell you what, if Dune gets delayed, we're gonna have to review Adam Sandler movies. It's gonna be Hubie Halloween all year. Because there's no movies are going to be released digitally. So I mean, it's like everything that we put on our movie madness bracket is next year. Can you imagine next year's movie madness?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think I cursed us because I did this big movie madness thing and everything got postponed. And you said that Trolls was going to win the year and you might be right.
I know.
Like, that's the scariest part. I did. I thought Dune was going to make it, and here we are. Trolls World Tour might make the most money, but let's get into Tenet and spoilers to follow, I guess, because I don't know if I understand this movie at all.
No, nobody really does.
And like I went on and read reviews for this, and everybody's review said you have to see this twice. This is a movie that you cannot see more than once, and if you do, or you have to see more than once, and if you don't see it more than once, you're going to be super confused and you're going to miss everything because you're listening to the soundtrack, you're watching the background, but you're missing stuff in the foreground and vice versa. Do you think that you understand this movie?
I think I understand what's necessary. I wouldn't say at any point, like, if Nicole asked me to explain it to her, I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, I can't. There's nothing to tell you. Or there is, but I can't, like, it would just sound like gobbledygook coming out of my mouth. So
yeah, it's like Denzel's son and Edward from Twilight try to save the world from Kenneth Branagh.
Right. Which were both really great, and we'll talk about that later. But, I mean, like, I understand where they enter, you know, the tenant, like it's 10 and 10, one going forward, one going backward.
Yeah.
I kind of like you kind of understand what's going on there, but as far as who's who and what's what and who's going which direction where and who's operating the pincer and all that other stuff, that gets tough. You got to, and like, I guess you guys got to step back and say there's a broad scope of who's moving in what direction. And then kind of go off of that. Not the like little micro directions, but, you know, in the big picture, who's moving in what, general direction.
So. Yeah. And on top of all of that, you have to keep in mind that the main premise is that the future declared war against the present because of climate change.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there and you're thinking, like, how the hell does that work? Because not once did they really allude to climate change. They led to, like, the destruction of areas and homelands. And
what's what they say is basically, or when Kenneth Branagh is giving his little speech right there at the end, and if we seems like we're jumping around, it's because
that's what the movie does.
Yeah. It's basically a palindrome. So when he's giving a speech, we learn that, you know, it's kind of, he thinks it's like what he's doing with his son. Like, he shouldn't have brought a son into this world. That's why he threatens to kill him. It's, he knows that the world is going to end, and he wants control over it. And I guess the future's kind of doing the same thing. It's like, it's so bad, we don't want you to get here. Like, it yeah. ends anyway. So if you get to this point, you're just going to see how bad this world is. And they want to stop it. But, I don't know. It's so weird.
At what point in the movie did you think you had it, and then another scene came in and you're like, no, I don't have it? Halfway through, like all the movie? Because that's where I was.
Every time they progress like a scene, they kind of hit a new reset button.
Yeah.
And it was fine because I was moving along, and I kind of, you know, Robert Pattinson kind of explained how things work, and you just, it's kind of like all Christopher Nolan's movies. You kind of got to pick a character and kind of ride with him. Like, and he's like your, and not, it's never really necessarily the main character. It's, you just pick a character and look at the movie through his eyes, or watch what he does, and he will guide you in different directions. That's kind of what he did. That's and I guess that was on purpose because he's moving backwards.
Yeah, everybody's moving in totally different directions, even though they think they're going the same.
Yeah. It's the only part that gets me. Okay, so we're giving up. I'll give up the ending right now, just in case. So we know the protagonist, and the only reason we're not calling the name is because he doesn't have one. That's how unimportant.
Yeah, John David Washington.
Yeah, it's kind of what Christopher Nolan does, is he doesn't make the characters as important as the story. The characters are all just pieces. But we find out he has created Tenet, this organization.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the moment where the pincer work is like kind of comes together. He was moving forward, and then he was moving backward in some ways. So when we see that, like, why was he even tested? You know what I mean? Like,
what, like when he was going to kill himself?
Yeah.
I think they were just that part was to realize that how important he is to the survival of the present. Like,
okay.
he stayed in there throughout that whole fight scene and didn't give up his men. When everybody else could have gave up their men, in a sense, he's a small cog in a big machine at that moment, but doesn't realize that he becomes the machine later. So he's securing, maybe it's like deja vu a little bit for him, where he's like, I know something else, or intuition.
Right.
I know something else is going to happen, so I have to kill myself. And when he wakes up and he's got to live in a lighthouse and he's doing pull-ups on the Titanic, that was one of the parts where I was like, okay, I think I have this movie figured out. And needless to say, that's the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
When they're saving the opera. But then I think the moment that got me, where I was cruising through and I was like, okay, I've got this. And then it's maybe towards the end where Elizabeth Debicki, who was fantastic in this, is getting killed by Kenneth Branagh. And then they walk in the other door. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, what is happening? Now what's going on? Now you've got me confused.
So that's kind of weird. For me, that was kind of the thing that I started piecing together. Like, it's weird. Don't think about it. Don't think about it from your point of view. Think about it from their point of view.
Yeah.
That's how it worked for me. Because they are going in a direction. You have to watch them move. And to them, they're moving forward. But to us, they're moving back. So it's just a point of view thing. And you just have to go into the point of view of that person. So not try to think of it from out here. Try to think of it from what that guy's doing at that time. But then they get into the turnstile, and it's like, oh man, what's going on now? And then they go in the opposite direction, but you know, that's kind of how I've been doing it.
Who do you think so if you have to nominate somebody from this movie as like the best person from this movie, who was it?
Neil. Robert Pattinson's character.
Robert Pattinson, yeah.
And
does that change your mind on him as Batman now?
Yes. Not 100%. But each movie I see him in, he gets further and further away from from Twilight. But he was smooth, he was suave, he was heroic,
mysterious.
Yeah. And he, you know, when he's in the gear, he's playing the hero well. So he does get a lot further away, in my opinion, than Twilight, and closer to Batman, in my opinion. So I don't feel so bad. I keep not feeling bad about him being Batman.
Yeah. I'm going with Washington because I think in the beginning when you're introduced to him, like for some people, this might be the first taste of John David Washington.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because a lot of – maybe they didn't see Black Klansman. So you're introduced to him and it comes off like he's just phoning it in for a little bit.
Right. Yeah, it kind of does.
And then you see John David's gears moving as you see the protagonist's gears moving as well. Like he ups his game as the movie progresses. And you're seeing him. He's the audience, I think. He's like the one who's trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
I think it goes from being a job, just another job to him, to like, oh shit, this is like, I got to save survival. The universe and change the world. So,
yeah, I think what Nolan does is he gets great actors to commit to these roles. And, you know, you went in and you're like, Michael Caine's in it for like a cup of tea because it's in England. And I was reading that he was like, everyone was locked in a room, like you said, like Tom Holland and Mark Ruffalo. Yeah. Everyone was locked in a room in Warner Brothers and they read their parts and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very Avengers Endgame.
And Michael Caine. Yeah, that's what people were saying.
Yeah, Michael Caine was asked in interviews what the movie was about, and he's like, I couldn't even tell you what it was about. Like, I'm in two scenes, and that's because Chris is my friend. Like, you know, he throws me a bone here and there, and when he needs an old Englishman, I'm in it.
Yeah.
But I think I can't find a problem with this movie as far as casting goes at all.
No.
I think everybody was phenomenal.
Yeah, everybody. Abrada was
so good.
I don't know how the Oscars are going to be. I don't know what's going to happen, but he would have to be nominated for this. I mean, I don't know what else.
I think all three men in this movie are I think everybody's going to get nominated
because
DeBecky crushed it.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen, but this has got to be a runaway front runner for it. I think that's it. It's important that nobody knows the story because no one's going to know the story anyway. So don't spend too much time thinking about it. You know what I mean? Like on paper, none of this makes any, like when you, this would be extremely hard to read and find and figure it out. But it's done and it's done well, I think in a certain respects. I mean, it's better than most times things we've seen and the way that like the 10 come together in that fight or the big battle.
Yeah, that was great.
With things moving in two directions and meeting at like one central point, them explaining how it's going to work and usage and paying attention to like tenses. They have, they're going to and stuff like that. They've already done this thing and they've done this thing. And it's so weird, like, you know, having your brain work in so many directions.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of like playing a video, like an open world video game where your bag gets full and you have to go back and find where you dropped weapons or health points and stuff like that. That's where John David's doing because he's got to remember what was dropped, what was going on.
Right.
And he's playing out this scene in real time to him, not knowing that it's future him going back to meet present him.
Yeah. And that's what I think, like, at the point where I kind of knew what was coming. I knew at some point, once they said, oh, you got to wear a mask and you got to wear clothes and stuff like this, I was like, okay. I know that they have at some point met each other And then it turned out that at that point in that facility is kind of where they might have met.
Did you see that coming?
Not. Well, I thought at some point they were definitely going to meet each other. And then we've seen so many masked people. I was like, it's something has to happen amongst all these people wearing masks, whether it's in the beginning or any other place. And then that prolonged reverse flight scene, which is really neat.
Yeah, that was great, one reverse, one forward
was really good. And I was like, you know, maybe that's where it is. But when it happened, I was still pretty surprised. And I still thought, you know, they did a great job, like, showing that to us and us figuring it out. So,
yeah, I thought that's where Pattinson was going to turn, because at that moment, he, you know, protagonist kills his assailant, but we don't see what happened to Neil's assailant.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he's like, oh, I took care of it. I was like, oh, okay, this is where you're going to turn. Like, you're you're working with the Middle Eastern woman. You're working with, you're like, you're against Tenet. Like, I don't know what you're doing, but, like, you have nefarious reasons for aligning yourself with John David Washington.
Yeah, I thought at some point Neil was going to have something shady going on, and I read some theories, because, you know, they're going to be out there. And most people's big theory is that, you know how much we love theories, is that Neil is Max, is the little kid.
Well, I was thinking too.
Yeah. And that's why he has such a long relationship with, because he's not old.
No.
You would say he's in his 30s, but he talks like they've known each other for a long time. And then the last person you see is Max and what's her name?
Elizabeth Debicki.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of her character's name, whatever. But that's the last people you see on the screen before it just cuts to black. So it makes me think that there's more to their story. There's more to that story. It is kind of a weird thing to think that we now know where his story ends, because we see he carries around that piece of string with the washer on it. So. We know that his is over. So
yeah, it's one of those things that, like, I know going into it, a lot of people said that this was going to be the potential sequel to Inception, that Robert Pattinson was Leonardo's kid grown up.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, okay, maybe Christopher Nolan's setting us up. Do you think that Christopher Nolan, in terms of directing, is what M. Night Shyamalan hoped to be? Because, like, they're both, like, twist-oriented and, like, very meta. Do you think that's, like, what he's trying to go for?
Yeah, in a way. But M. Night Shyamalan's twists were always, like, jarring. They weren't too well thought out and planned. You know, like, you didn't think, he didn't lay all this groundwork.
Yeah.
Where
Nolan's are more of like, we're going to leave the twist up to the audience to see if they can decipher, or if there is even a twist.
And it's something he's been doing. I mean, I can name, Memento was, I think I broke my DVD watching Memento.
Inception.
Inception, Batman. Batman wasn't a twisty movie. It was just,
The Dark Knight Rises, we had the Talia twist.
Right, true. But not, I mean, like, he had it's like his only preordained storyline that he had to follow to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But still made it his own. It made it really good. So,
yeah.
Everything he's done is slow, meandering, and I kind of had for like the first 30 minutes, like you were saying, and this is a 2.5 hour movie, by the way.
Yeah, it's a long 2.5 hour movie too.
Yeah, well, the first half, well, not even half, it's not for like 30 minutes. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah,
they don't lead you to anything. He's just meeting the characters that are going to be in the movie. And he does, like, some spy stuff. He, you know, does some, you know...
does some James Bond-esque.
Yeah. But he doesn't really... He doesn't get into, like, any heavy espionage. He's just searching these characters out. And then it kind of, like, starts to, like, snowball from there. And you have to... Maybe that's Christopher Nolan's way of doing things, too, is... For 30 minutes, you're watching, you're like, you're kind of lulled into like, what's going on here? And you think that's going to be the pace throughout the movie. And then it kind of like exponentially goes crazy. And there's so many things that you have to follow. And he's giving you things to pay attention to. He's giving you things you, and he's not making like broken glass play such a big part of this whole movie. Like,
yeah,
you see broken glass is an indicator of like, oh, this is going to happen. Something's going to happen soon or in the future, but we don't know how and we don't know what's going to happen. So the indicators are there. He doesn't hide them much, but then like he does a great job of like making you care about how it's done. So
yeah, do you think when it comes to Nolan, do you think that he's trying to outsmart the viewers? Because like you said, the glass does play a huge part, but as you're watching this movie for the first time, you're trying to pick up the storyline because you're immediately, like you said, you're lulled into a sense of security. And then once the bass drops, you're sitting there and you have to pick up on every moment, every line, every person who enters the frame, and you forget about that. So do you think he's trying to outsmart us as moviegoers, or he's making too smart of movies?
Sometimes. I do definitely think it's a Nolan versus the audience. I don't even think it's like outsmart. It's like him versus us. Like he's daring us to say, I get it. And because he sets us up for failure in his movies. Like the scores are always, the sound mixing's weird. The scores are always too big and it's hard to hear what people are saying. And like in Dunkirk, you could never hear what anybody was talking about.
I don't even think there were lines in that movie.
Yeah, you know, there's part of me wants to say, well, you're supposed to be immersed in, like, the battle, but it's not 100% true. It's like, his characters mean nothing. And the people
we missed the Harry Styles performance.
Right.
Halfway through Act 3, there was a dance number.
But all that means nothing. It's all about him telling it, starting and finishing his story the way he wants to. He doesn't care about characters, and, you know, I guess he, you know, us as viewers are going to get excited about watching characters, but it's just that there's all these little things that he doesn't care about whether the viewer likes it or not and whether the viewer gets it or not. So
yeah, you made mention to the score, and the score was, it reminded me of like a 96 Honda Civic with a really expensive subwoofer in the back, because there was a lot of bass, but the score
and the trunk's rattling.
But the score plays, it's like another character in the movie, because you have to follow along with the moments. I read an article that says that Hans Zimmer isn't going to be missed because we found the new Hans Zimmer. And Ludwig Göransson, same guy who does The Mandalorian, he did he's Childish Gambino's producer. Do you think he's the next big name in scoring?
There's very few left, I mean, that are really working on everything, and he's one. And to kind of inherit, like, the Star Wars universe from John Williams and then become Christopher Nolan's go-to and all this other stuff is kind of a big deal. You can't help but be like, okay, well, that's pretty crazy, you know, like...
Yeah,
he did the
Black
guy.
Panther.
Yeah.
He did Black Panther. He did Jungle Book. I don't think he did Jungle Book. I think he did Lion King, which is getting a sequel. Who cares? But yeah, I think he might be he's the go-to guy now.
Yeah.
It was like Michael Ciccone was another name that was out there who's done a ton of stuff that we've watched. But I think Ludwig, the transition from just making... So he goes from making great music with Donald to great scores. It's absolutely phenomenal. Another thing that was kind of phenomenal about this was the cinematography. I think just you're watching, like, I think what people are who are going to see this movie are going to miss out on is that the stunt people are working on stunts forward and backwards. So like, you have to learn how to do stunts backwards, but you're also learning how to make a movie backwards too, which is kind of crazy. And then just the shots, the pan in, the pan out, the, you know, the observation of the focus on the foreground was really, really good.
Yeah. There's so many things to pay attention to, and at least in that respect, like you said, forward and backward. Time-wise, there's so many things to, like, for your brain to process. And, I mean, visually, it's good that he gave his red team, blue team. But also, like, yeah, there's fights that happen in forward, and one guy going forward, one guy going backwards. There's a fight that, like, was a lot of driving backwards while everybody's driving forward. There's so many things that, like, have to happen. That, yeah, their stunt crew is amazing. Like, I don't know how they accomplish any of that, really.
Last act where John David's sliding into the scene and they're playing something from an hour and a half ago backwards. I was like, oh my goodness! Like, yeah. I wonder how that would, like, if that was shot same day.
I don't know, because it's sped up, but. Sped up in reverse. I don't even know. I guess it's reverse for one and forward for the other. And there's so many. There's scenes where first of all, he never played it safe. Like, he was like, if there's an opportunity to kind of fool you and make your brain, you know, mushy, they were going to take it. And that fight scene was one that, like, it was so weird watching something and have it work that. And I was like, it has to be really, really complicated. I don't know how they did it. Maybe one day they'll release, like, the footage of them training for it. But like you said, a stunt crew to have to get acting credits on this because none of it makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That driving scene where whoever's driving backwards, I think in the BMW, for as long as they are, I looked at Chelsea. I was like, I can't back into a parking spot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I have trouble backing into a parking spot. And these guys are driving, staying in between the lines, swerving between cars. That was a masterclass of stunt work. And I don't know if the Academy has changed their viewpoint, but I feel like stunts need to be categorized.
I think they always do it in that off-site awards where it's like,
oh, like nobody the SAGs sees or whatever.
Yeah, well, no, it's like they give all those awards out for the crew, basically. Yeah, you know,
that should be done. Like, you remember when Spike used to do like the guy awards?
Yeah,
the man awards. I wish that like there was something like that again, where it was like stunts and costumes and like cinematographers, they get like it's their day, not the actors and actresses.
Right.
But maybe Active Geek Productions will do a live show in 2000 Oscar season. That'll be our show. What do you give this? Because this is a tough one. I don't think that this is Chris Nolan's best movie. I'm a sucker for the Batman stuff, but yeah. I appreciate
and Memento
Inception.
Is still one of my all-time
Memento
favorite.
Is a legendary movie, and Dunkirk was really, really great. I know I saw that with you.
We did. It's a tough one. It's definitely Batman was a broader scope, more people like Batman was a great movie, and it is probably my favorite thing that he's done. But I don't think it's his best movie. You know what I mean? Like,
no, that's definitely Memento.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Memento would be like the best movie that's his movie, and it's his story and everything else. They're all good, but I think that's still my favorite. So
what do you give? What do you give this one? Is this a 5?
It's close. It's real close. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay, I went 4.5.
I can't. There's so much, and I you know. Maybe the sound would bring it down a little bit because it's kind of like it drowns everything else. But watchability wise, it's going to retain watchability because you're going to try to figure out more and more and more.
I think it's going to get better on the second watch. When I saw Inception, I thought it was a good movie. When I saw it the second time, I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah.
And yeah. That, and like as I continue to watch it, I keep to I unwrap yeah. more little presents that Christopher Nolan's left for me.
Right, exactly. That's the best way to put it. So.
So yeah, 5, 4.5, not bad.
It's really good.
Best movie I've seen this year. It's better than Trolls.
Knives Out.
Knives Out was last year.
Was it? I thought it was this year.
I saw it in November of last year.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Yeah.
When did we review it?
I don't think we ever did.
I thought we reviewed it.
We might have reviewed it in November. I don't know.
It's like this movie, time is weird. In 2020.
You're moving backwards, I'm moving forwards.
In 2020, time has been weird.
Yeah. I want to connect some parallels. There's been some... You've left some Easter eggs, and the internet's left some Easter eggs. So we talked Fantastic Four earlier in the episode, and John David Washington was asked if he has received any calls from Marvel or DC, and if he would leave his schedule open for a superhero movie. He said, for the first part, no, I haven't received any calls, which is surprising. If you don't have him... Like, it's the same thing with Charlize Theron. Like, neither one of them have been contacted when they should be. And maybe this could lead to a new movie, which John David Washington said he'd be open for, Fantastic Four. Now, can you see him as Mr. Fantastic Reed Richards?
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
You know, Reed Richards is, depending on what universe he comes from, but 90% of the time he's an asshole. And he's kind of very self-confident, get whatever needs to be done, at all costs. And that's kind of how you're introduced to this guy, is he's that character. And, you know, he kind of develops as we watch him in this movie. So I think he'd be pretty good at it.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
I could see him in that role, and I'm going to put Charlize Theron as Sue Storm, just because I want them both in Marvel so bad. But I could also, you know, I'd like to see him lead the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, John Stewart?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, that would be great.
That would be the role. That's my perfect role for him, because I think that he is... He's what DC needs. He needs a star on the rise, not a star at its peak.
Yeah.
And right. I think if they can capitalize on his star power right now, just like they're doing with Robert Pattinson, they could have something for the future. And who knows? Yeah. It doesn't have to take place in current day. John Stewart's Green Lantern could take place in the 90s as well, and then we could get a reunion between John David and Robert Pattinson.
Very true. Yeah.
So there's a lot of layers to it, but...
We're doing alternate universes anyway.
Yeah.
As far as we're concerned, we don't really know what's going on. So there's no reason why Pattinson's Batmaniverse couldn't interact with Jon Stewart's universe and just be on their own trajectory.
And you could have
a whole different type of creation of the Justice League, different than anything else. So.
Yeah, you could do a Justice League with Pattinson, John David's John Stewart, Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, who's in the 80s currently, so we can see her go through the 90s, and then you could leave Aquaman. I mean, even he's ageless, but you could always bring him back in time. But you could always have Aquaman, Shazam leading that new age with Superman and Batfleck.
Yeah.
Did we just fix DC's?
We've done more work than they have to fix it, so
I agree. I totally agree. But that's it, man. We're gonna get out of here. We got a 5 on your end, a 4.5 on my end.
I hope we helped somebody understand it, but I know we haven't. There is no understanding it, at least the first time around.
I know one person besides you who has seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, we're in the COVID corridor over here on the East Coast. So I think a lot of people were very fearful to go out. And this made a good amount of money. It made over $400 million, but a lot of that came from overseas.
Yeah.
I don't think California has opened their theaters yet.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I know this made $30 million in China on opening week.
That's pretty good.
During a pandemic, it's almost a $500 million movie. I would be surprised if this wasn't a $1 billion movie during a regular year.
Yeah, because it's good. I mean, you could say, how much money would it have made in a regular year? Well, this is the only thing out right now. But it's the only thing out right now, but it is good. So, yeah, it would have easily made $1 billion, I think.
Yeah.
And
the problem with this is I think that when this gets put out on DVD in 2021, it's not going to hold the same weight as it would have if you went and saw it in theater. This is an IMAX 4D experience. Right, so you need to be in a chair where, like, it's misting and glass is shattering next to you, but you're okay because you're in your bubble and you have your mask on. But I think that this is 100% a theater movie, and this is why theaters should stay open. You know, this is why we need movie theaters for this reason.
There's definitely movies that I only see in theaters, and or not only see in theaters, but prefer to see in theaters, and other movies. Like, that's how I balance my life. I don't need to go see a drama, in a theater. I need to see something, unless it's like a wartime drama, because that's all part. You know, that the set pieces are part of the our characters in the movie, but I don't need to see like a love story in the movie theaters because it doesn't make a difference where you see that. Action movies, in particular this action movie, have a home in a theater, and that's where they need to be or should be seen. And maybe that was Nolan's whole objective to this, is it doesn't deliver the punch. It's not going to deliver the punch that it needs in home, or at home. You're never going to get it, so... Maybe that's what it was about.
My thought is just if movie theaters don't work out anymore, there's always time for the drive-in. And it could be on a movie basis.
We have one here.
Yeah.
So.
But like, I'm not going to go see Bill and Ted at a drive-in. You know what I mean?
Right.
Could you imagine like if Dune gets released on home video, we'll call it VOD, is that going to be as good as it would have been in theaters? No, not at all. Like, I want it to be...
Already,
I don't want it to be postponed.
Don't say that. I want to see another movie this year.
Man, I'm telling you, Hubie Halloween, what we're going to record next week.
I'll be finished Cobra Kai by then, so maybe...
Yeah, didn't the new season just come out?
Second one is out. Third season's been... They gave a release date for the third season.
And got...
And announced fourth season. So.
Netflix is holding on where YouTube couldn't. But we'll see. Maybe.
And if you watch it, if you ever watch, or I don't know if you, but if you watch it, like the teaser for season three is crazy. Like there's a lot of going on. And,
I am 100% current on Cobra Kai.
Okay.
So maybe next week we can discuss some Cobra Kai because there's not a lot. Well, there's a lot of spooky stuff coming out, but that's Hubie Halloween, like I said, The Haunting of Bly Manor is coming out on Netflix, and then
maybe once we shut down, maybe we'll have a conversation about some scary, spooky October stuff we could do.
Yeah.
I don't know,
but we will shut down. We'll shut down right here. Follow us on social media, the Galaxy Wars Podcast, every Wednesday, Active Geek Podcast. Like I said earlier in the show, I'm doing a YouTube show now, and that's called Super Late Show, so you can catch me on there. Give some love to the podcast as much as I possibly can. And we'll be back next week with some fun discussions, maybe a little karate. It might turn into a UFC episode, who knows, but here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.